From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the fifth day of February, 2015. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker. He's at CGB Enterprises out of Mandeville, Louisiana. Channel Seeds' Matt Bennett will be here to look at the cash grain market, and we'll discuss the weather forecast, too. Then with Mike Tenora out of T-Storm in Chicago, Illinois. In fact, Mike has a really interesting tidbit about the Chicago snowfall, the record breaker last week, and the warm weather that they've been having out in the western Great Plains area. It should be a great listen. Stay with us for this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Checking out the numbers as they finished up in Chicago on this Thursday afternoon. Futures in the corn pit were higher, up a penny and three quarters in the March contract at 385 at a quarter, May at 393 and a quarter, 1 3/4 higher, and the July futures at $4.5, up 1 1/2. December contract at 416, that finished a penny and three quarters higher for the day. Soy complex now, bean futures finished the lead option March up 9 1/4 at $9.81 1/4, May at 987 3/4 up 9 cents, and July at 992 3/4 up 9. August 992 1/4 up 9 1/2. Next year's November 964 3/4, 9 3/4 higher. Bean meal on the day at 331.40, down 130, and the bean oil on the afternoon finished at 31.71, up $1.12. Soft red winter wheat in Chicago at $5.25 3/4 a gain today, up 14 3/4 cents. Hard red at 5.64, up 11 1/4. Checking the live cattle futures from the CME Group, $153.70 per hundredweight was the final price in the February contract at 70 cents higher. The April down 47 1/2 at 148.17 1/2. Feeder cattle for the afternoon finished the lead March at $196 and a nickel down 67 1/2 cents. April at 196.17 1/2, 67 1/2 lower as well. And the lean hogs, February contract $63 down $2 for the day. April down $1.87 1/2 at $66.25. Of course, you're listening to WILL AM 580, the Closing Market Report, in Illinois Public Media on this and many other radio stations. Stay with us. We'll be here for the next 30 minutes and back in just a couple of minutes when we'll talk more with Dan Zwicker at CGB Enterprises.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at agrigold.com.
Let's check in on the outside markets at this hour. March crude oil at $50.53 a barrel, $2.08 higher. Diesel fuel on the day at $1.80 7/10. That's up 4 cents for the afternoon. Gasoline, RBOB price, that's the wholesale, up 4 1/2 cents at $1.52 7/10. And natural gas at $2.60 1/10, up 6 1/10 cents, or rather down 6 1/10 cents. Ethanol futures for the day are currently at $1.46 6/10 on their settlement price, up 2 6/10 for the afternoon. The Dow Jones Industrial Average at about 17,777, just around 209 points higher. Gold futures at $1,265 are up about 75 cents, and the U.S. dollar index at 93.735 is down 0.43 on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area today. Sunny skies, a high of 17. Tonight, partly cloudy and a low of just 10. Tomorrow, Friday, mostly sunny and 34 degrees. And Friday night, partly cloudy and 30. On Saturday, we'll see sunny skies with a high of 42. Saturday night, mostly cloudy and 36. Sunday, mostly cloudy skies, 42 degrees. Sunday night, cloudy and 27. And by the time we get to Monday of next week, we'll see partly cloudy skies and a high of 30 degrees. Monday night, partly cloudy and 19. And on Tuesday, cloudy and 23. Wednesday, cloudy and 37. We'll take a more complete look at the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour. We'll talk with Mike Tenora. He's at T-Storm Weather out of Chicago, Illinois. This is willag.org.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, offering financial products and services specifically for the agriculture industry, including farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing, as well as farm cash management solutions.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on a Thursday afternoon. Joining us from Iowa, Louisiana, that is Dan Zwicker. He's with CGB Enterprises in Iowa, Louisiana. Somewhere, I suppose, Dan, along Interstate 10 on your way to Texas. Is that right?
Yes, it's right off Interstate 10, and we don't have the snow that Iowa has, the real Iowa, I guess. We're mid-50s, and the sun is shining a little bit.
I would hope you don't have snow. If you have snow, we have bigger problems than Iowa being cold, that's for sure. Okay, we need to go through some of the numbers today. When we talked earlier this morning on the mid-morning market report, we talked a little bit about wheat maybe leading this market higher. It was up at that time around 9 to 10 cents, but had been up around 14 for the day, and that's pretty much where she managed to settle. Does this give you any idea about what the charts are going to show wheat in the way of being able to lead this market through the next month or so?
Well, from a technical perspective, unless everything falls apart tomorrow, we're going to close out the week with a weekly reversal to the upside after a long slide down in the market. We had a top right there around December 18th, had a spike high, and the wheat market has been in decline since then. And now, if we, like I said, hold today's advances into Friday's close, we're going to close out the week with a weekly reversal to the upside. Now, this is somewhat counter-seasonal, what wheat does on an average basis. And I know we can get lost in averages, but I always kind of watch them to see how the market is performing against an average pattern. And normally wheat would rally like it did through the fall into December, and then that strength then would continue on into like a February high, and then we would start our descent down into a June, July type harvest low. Since we peaked there in December, we've had a long decline down, and now when we should be making our seasonal high based upon an average price pattern, it looks like we could be making a winter bottom in here and in position here to maybe rally into the spring. I think a couple things that could be driving this today, I think, especially with probably the news that the Egypt got $100 million of U.S. credit line to buy some wheat. So they're going to be in the market tendering for some wheat. Also, I think people are somewhat concerned yet with the overall winter wheat crop prospects. We still have a long ways to go before those prospects are shored up. And overall acreage levels are lower than what people thought they were going to be a few months back. So there is reason to think that maybe the wheat market can lead the charge higher. In the old days, that's basically it was wheat or soybeans led the market. Corn really wasn't much of a leader because it was a feed grain. But now, since it's also an energy grain, it has been able to, you know, come out and take the lead at times over the past 10 years or so. But when you got crude oil prices down in the cellar, it's kind of hard to get corn to come up on crude oil prices, at least at this point in time.
So the fundamentals that you explained to me in wheat, they've been around for a while, at least since the January 12th USDA reports on total number of acreage and ideas that we had some drier areas. We were late getting in some places. Why is it now that you suppose the trade is taking real notice of these things?
Well, the only my guess is that once you get past that January final crop report there around the, you know, the 10th or the 12th of January, that kind of puts the final nail in the coffin of the previous year's crop. And then we kind of start the transition process to new crop prospects. And I think that's probably what's happened here over the past 3 weeks. Another thing that's probably, it could be more of a driving force than maybe some of the stuff that I talked about, is that when the European Central Bank announced their Gonzalez-type quantitative easing program, the dollar surged sharply higher. That kind of cast a real bearish net clear across the commodity complex here in the United States with a stronger dollar. And I kind of viewed that as maybe a blow-off type top for the dollar, because the dollar had been in an uptrend basically since June, so it wasn't anything new. And after we got through that initial bust to the upside, you've seen that the dollar has gone sideways and has started weakening. And I think, you know, that could maybe be contributed to that, maybe kind of maybe fueled some of the strength that we saw in the market on Tuesday. And now the dollar is continuing to weaken. And now that is kind of following, you know, showing up over in the commodity complex.
This morning you suggested maybe there might be some changes in the WASDE report on the exports for corn. Do you suppose the ethanol number will change?
I don't know if they'll mess with the ethanol number right away. There's no doubt about it that we had one of the smallest production numbers for several weeks here this past week. But I think they'll leave that alone, at least for right now. We do have crude oil prices rebounding. But I do think when you look at the export sales pace, even though it is behind last year's level, it's running well above what USDA has pegged in their balance sheet. So there is room maybe for upwards of a 50 million bushel increase, but it, you know, it's not a major significant impact to the bottom line. But anytime you save a little bit of production here and save a little bit of supply there, all of a sudden, you know, the market has to react to smaller inventory. So I do think that is in the works. Also, when you take a look at soybeans, their pace is very hefty. Today's numbers were above trade expectations. And yes, I do understand there's a big South American crop coming at us. But you got to keep in mind that China keeps bringing us over a lot of products that are sold at Target and Walmart and Sears and Roebuck and JCPenney, and they are all containers. And those containers are not going to go back to China empty. So they're going to go back full of soybeans. So we're still going to be able to sell soybeans to China even with that South American crop.
Hey, thanks so much for taking the time with us. I'll call you in just about 40 minutes for Commodity Week, okay?
Very well.
That is Dan Zwicker. He's with CGB Enterprises on the side of the road there along Interstate 10 in Iowa, Louisiana. We'll catch up with him, as I said. In another 40 minutes or so, we'll record Commodity Week. Along with him, we'll have Ellen Dearden of AgriView and Matt Bennett, who will also be on this program in just about 10 minutes, and Joel Carlin of Western Milling. So we'll put that up on the website at willag.org, hopefully this afternoon, though I do have to get off to the Northfield Inn and Suites in Springfield pretty shortly today, so we'll see how quickly I can get it all edited and moved around. And tonight, Matt will be there too, along with Kurt Kimmel and Bill Mayer. That one's open. It's a free Willa Ag Outlook meeting sponsored by Strategic Farm Marketing. Starts at 6:30. They'll begin with a crop insurance and farm bill overview, and then we'll pick up the marketing panel after that. And Saturday, we'll be in Joliet at the Farmland Forum. You can check it out at chicagofarmers.org at 11:15 a.m. Matt Bennett and Chuck Shelby and Gary Schnitke will be at that event. So I hope that you can check us out at one of those events. Find us online at willag.org. This one's no surprise, but commodity organizations are lining up in opposition to the RFS Reform Act. Representatives Bob Goodlatte, Jim Costa, Steve Womack, and Peter Welch have reintroduced the RFS Reform Act. National Corn Growers Association President Chip Bowling says the congressmen have put big oil ahead of American corn farmers,
who he says have answered the call for clean, renewable American-grown energy. Bowling says repealing the RFS would increase the cost of farm programs, hurt rural communities, and make America more dependent on foreign oil. Growth Energy CEO Tom Bias says the bill does nothing to address the critical policy goal of achieving U.S. energy independence, nor will it lower the price of food, as the congressman claimed. Bias says the legislation is a wish list for RFS opponents who want to kill the RFS and all the successes Americans have realized as a result of the policy. And National Farmers Union President Roger Johnson says the legislation is not only a bad step for agriculture, but also a major setback to the environment and the nation's attempt to manage carbon emissions. These organizations urge Congress to reject this policy and continue to embrace the vision of a robust renewable fuels industry as a component of America's overall energy portfolio. We'll stay in Washington, where the House Committee on Transportation and Infrastructure and Senate Committee on the Environment and Public Works held a joint hearing yesterday on the proposed Waters of the U.S. rule. American Farm Bureau President Bob Stallman wrote a letter to the committee chairman thanking them for standing up for farmers and ranchers to shed light on the unprecedented expansion of the federal government's regulation of farm and ranch lands, according to him. Stallman says EPA and its supporters have fought a fierce battle to obscure the full impact of the rule, but Congress has labored to uncover the truth behind it all. Farm Bureau looks forward to working with Congress, he says, to stop the regulatory overreach. And finally today, a senator from New Hampshire and one from Pennsylvania have introduced a bill to cap crop insurance premium subsidies at $50,000, which they say the Congressional Budget Office estimates would reduce the deficit by some $2.2 billion over 10 years. The senators say taxpayers should not be footing the bill for a program benefiting large companies that don't need it, and that total federal spending has more than doubled since 2000. And this legislation offers lawmakers the opportunities to save billions and make common sense reforms. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Guarantee your seats today for the March 10th All-Day Ag Outlook meeting. It's at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. The cost is $25 and includes a continental breakfast and Beef House lunch. Keynoting the day is Sue Martin of Ag and Investment Services, and we'll get a presentation on land values from Murray Wise. And we'll take all of your questions on soybean and corn futures, cash grain, and whatever else is on your mind. Call now for tickets at 217-333-7300. That's 217-333-7300.
For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. You know, the nation's cattle producers are expanding the herd, and they're doing it at a somewhat faster rate than has been anticipated. USDA, in the semi-annual update of cattle numbers, calculates the total number of cattle and calves has increased by a bit more than 1%. It's the first increase in the cattle inventory since 2007. Well, the industry suffered high feed prices and poor pasture conditions in the southern plains over the intervening years. 2014 provided a series of reasons to change course, says Purdue University Extension ag economist Chris Hurt.
Now, there were multiple incentives to expand in 2014. These were led by record high cattle prices, with finished cattle averaging near $155 per live hundredweight, and Oklahoma City 500 to 550-pound steer calves averaging $250 per hundredweight. The other part of the incentive, of course, was more abundant feed due to retreating drought in the central and southern plains, and that helped restore pasture conditions, and also favorable feed crop production in 2013 and 14, which lowered corn and protein feed cost.
Well, the most significant expansion is underway in the beef herd, where beef cow numbers are up 2% from year-ago levels. The number of beef heifers being held back to enter the breeding herd is up 4%. Significantly, the number of those retained heifers that will calve this year, that's up 7%. And this means 61% of the beef heifers that have been retained to enter the breeding herd were already bred at the start of this year. The 2014 beef cow herd expansion, thinks Hurt, is likely the beginning of a multi-year increase.
It's common for the beef herd to be in expansion from 4 to 6 years, with 2014 registering as the first of those years of expansion. This means expansion could continue through a better part of this decade. If that is the case, then beef peak beef production on this cycle would not be expected until early in the next decade.
Well, beef supplies, however, for this year will not change much. This might lead one to anticipate prices to be near the $155 finished cattle price of 2014. However, 2014 was an exceptional year, and meat prices in general this year may be lower, explains Chris Hurt. Currently, futures markets are heavily discounting cash cattle prices, suggesting 2015 average finished cattle prices in the higher 140s. However, he expects finished cattle prices to average about $150 to $157 in 2015, with prices in the early spring in the upper 150s and the lower 160s, and then to fall near $150 in the summer months, and then to turn back up into the mid-150s by the end of the year. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. Listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Visit our website at willag.org. But more importantly than that, you might visit with us tonight in Springfield if you're in the area at the Northfield Inn in Suites. We'll be at the that building with Matt Bennett, Kurt Kimmel, and Bill Mayer for one of our Willag panels and a strategic farm marketing crop insurance and farm bill outlook. Matt Bennett, speaking of which, is on the phone line now to take up the cash grain market. Hi, Matt. Thanks for being here today with us this evening and again in Joliet on Saturday morning. We appreciate that. What kinds of things will we be talking about with the audiences over those three times?
Well, I think obviously guys are a little bit worried about what their profitability levels are looking like with the way things have gone here in the last couple months. You know, obviously we've got a great rally coming through harvest, but and we had a good rally last year from this point forward when guys were really worried about markets. So I think guys are wondering, hey, are we going to get that opportunity again? And we'll talk about the ramifications of whether we get it or whether we don't.
And what do you think the possibility of getting that jump might be?
Well, I don't know that I want to hang my hat on that just yet. I think that the way I look at these markets, the corn and bean markets are a little bit different for me, two different situations. I think the corn market could have a little bit of a shot in the arm due to acreage at some point. But I think when the world situation with beans is what it is, I think I have a hard time coming up with a bean rally. So it'll be really interesting to see how those two work together as we move forward. But I think there could be some light of the day there for corn at some point. I just don't know exactly when that's going to be.
All right. Well, we'll learn more with you over the next couple of meetings. See you tonight at around 6:30, 7 o'clock there at the Northfield Inn and Suites. Thanks so much for being with us this afternoon.
Sounds good. Thanks, Todd.
And that, of course, is Matt Bennett. He is with Channel Seeds and hails from Windsor, Illinois. Back in just a couple minutes with a look at the agricultural weather forecast with Mike Tenora.
It's National Chocolate Fondue Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1840, Sir Hiram Maxim was born, an American inventor. He filed hundreds of patents in the U.S. and Great Britain for a wide range of products, including mousetraps, steam power water pumps, vacuum pumps, and gas motors. In 1815, Gale Borden was issued a patent for a baked combination of extracts from meat with flour. The so-called meat biscuit became a staple of the military. He also perfected a process to heat milk in a vacuum to produce condensed milk. Borden's today is one of the biggest dairy product companies in the world. In 1872, Lafayette Benedict Mendel was born. An American biochemist, he made numerous discoveries about the value of vitamins and proteins, and he helped establish modern concepts in nutrition. A key discovery, that butterfat contained a growth-promoting factor necessary for development, soon known as fat-soluble vitamin A. And in 1884, Willis Johnson of Cincinnati, Ohio, received a patent for an egg beater. And that's this day in agricultural history.
listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's a Thursday afternoon. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. Mike Tenora is on the phone line from Chicago, Illinois, at T-Storm Weather to take a look at the weather forecast for the growing areas around the planet. Let's start, Mike, in South America. What kind of conditions are you seeing there?
The big story in South America regards the cool front that's moving into northern growing areas of Brazil. This area has had very little in the way of rainfall over the last 45 days, and you could even extend that back 60 days, depending on how you want to look at it and in which area. But the point is that it's been very dry in the northern areas of Brazil. We would estimate that this is including around 20 to 30% of soybean production across the country and up to 50% of first crop corn. So this is a fairly large area that is quite dry with rainfall deficits over the last 45 days, having ranged from 8 inches to 12 inches. That's a big number, and that is something that we'll have to keep an eye on. Now, for them, we do have this cool front moving in. It developed some pretty significant thunderstorms over the last 24 hours, and we're looking for several more thunderstorm clusters over the next 4 to 5 days. So for the first time in about 2 months, we'll see some big rains there, and that will aid some of those crops that need rain. The big question, of course, is how beneficial is the rain, because is it past the point of no return for some of these crops? That's something that we just don't have the answer to. The thing we do know, though, is that it will slow harvesting, because soybean harvesting is beginning at the moment, and this will at least temporarily break that situation. Keep in mind, though, this only lasts for 4 to 5 days. Once we get into next week, it looks like the old pattern takes place, and we start to turn dry once again.
On the subject of precipitation, rainfall, snow in your area there in Chicago, some really big numbers. Out west, they were relieved a little bit, too, I suppose, but they've had some unique temperatures, I think, in parts of the hard red winter growing regions of the nation.
It's really quite astonishing just how warm it's been at times over the last couple of weeks out in the plains. If you look at Nebraska and Kansas alone, they tied or set all-time records for the month of January on the 27th of January. High temperatures made it all the way up to 83 degrees at several locations in Kansas. Now, the interesting thing is that as we go forward, we're looking for another round of similar warmth, and we would not be surprised to see an 80-degree reading in southwest Nebraska either tomorrow or Saturday or Sunday. So this is a very unusual air mass, and it does pique our interest a little bit, and that when we see something like this, it makes us wonder what might happen later on in the spring and the summer, because this is such an anomalous situation to be having these types of temperatures now twice in a two-week period. But whether or not it means anything is very debatable, and we would not be comfortable forecasting unusual weather far into the future based on this. But again, this is something we need to watch, and if something unusual does happen, it probably would be somewhat related to what we're seeing now. Here is one interesting tidbit, though. On January 22, 1967, those records were set in Nebraska that were then broken on January 27th of this year. For those of you who follow snowstorm history, you'll note that 5 days after that in 1967, Chicago had its all-time blizzard. Interestingly enough, 5 days later, we had this huge snowstorm in Chicago on Sunday, ranking as the number 5 biggest snow total. So it's just odd that you would see records being broken in Nebraska for the month of January in 1967, then have a blizzard, and then have the exact same thing happen this year.
Well, it's always fun to talk to you. Thanks so much, Mike, for all the tidbits and doing all the work with the agricultural weather. We'll catch up with you again next week.
Sounds great, Todd.
That's Mike Tenora, of course. He's with T-Storm Weather out of Chicago, Illinois. He joins us on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason. Don't forget that tonight we'll be at the Springfield Inn & Suites with our Will Ag panel. Matt Bennett, Kurt Kimmel, and Bill Mayer will be there. It's free, open to everybody. It's 6:30, Northfield Inn & Suites in Springfield. Take the Sangamon Avenue exit off of Interstate 55. On Saturday, we'll be at the Chicago Farmers Farmland Forum in Joliet at the Weitendorf Agricultural Educational Center. That's at the Joliet Junior College on Laraway Road across from the Chicago Speedway there in Joliet at 11:15. This one is not open, but it's a great event at the Farmland Forum if you want to go. Matt Bennett and Chuck Shelby and Gary Schnittke will be there. And then next week, we'll be at the Knox Agri Center on the 11th day of February. February with Kurt Kimmel, Bill Mayer, and Chip Nellinger. That one starts at 6:32. Find all of that information on our website at willag.org. And, of course, a way to purchase your tickets for the big all-day Ag Outlook right there online at willag.org. They're just $25 apiece. You can buy them online or call now at 217-333-7300.